Welcome to Unleash Your Impact, Unlock Others, a podcast about inspiring leadership. We hope to bring you grounded wisdom, stories from real leaders, and leave you feeling inspired. Let's dive in. So welcome to Unleash Your Impact, Unlock Others. My name's Dave Morris, and this is a Leadership Unscripted episode with myself and Rich, entitled Why Experience Alone Doesn't Create Leadership Confidence. This is one of 8 podcasts in the next few weeks on the whole topic of confidence in leadership. Now, most leaders we work with have done everything right. They've delivered results. They've earned their stripes, so to speak. They've climbed the proverbial career ladder. Yet many of them don't feel confident. They're not settled, not secure, and not grounded in the role that they're in. So this episode, the first in our Confidence in Leadership series, is where Rich and I explore what it means to be a confident leader. Authentic confidence is not about performance. It's a practice. It's the inner strength that enables leaders to show up with clarity, with humility, and with influence, even when the pressure is high and the answers are unclear. So today we're talking about why experience alone doesn't create leadership confidence, and more importantly, what does. So without any further ado, welcome Rich.
Hi Dave, good to see you.
So I hope you're feeling confident today.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
So I see what my experience of this podcast is and whether it feeds my confidence.
Well, and funny you should say that, because I wanted to sort of start the podcast really with this, busting a bit of myth around, you know, does experience alone make you a confident leader? Yeah. So I guess that's the starting point really to ask you is really, why do so many highly experienced leaders still feel unsure of themselves?
Yeah, so I think in your intro, you talked about leaders having earned their stripes. You know, they come through the ranks. Often leaders, I find, what it happened in my own personal experience, actually, I was working in a particular discipline, mm-hmm. is in IT. You know, I'd learned to program, I'd learned to support and manage PCs and servers. You know, so that particular discipline I was highly skilled in.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I was promoted into a role where that experience and that knowledge was less relevant to the actual challenges I was facing in the context of, say, leadership. So, you know, the ability to, you know, to work with the politics of the organisation, the ability to work with the dynamics of the team, all those sort of interpersonal challenges that you find as a leader. And, you know, so all the stuff, all that bank of knowledge and experience that you've built up suddenly becomes less relevant and you feel more exposed. And if your sense of self-worth is, say, a little bit fragile and then you're exposed, that fragility then probably shows itself up invisibly, probably, is imposter syndrome.
It reminds me of a book that I think you recommended to me a while ago. And I think the title was something like, What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's what was in my mind when I was talking.
And I guess, so what I guess you're saying here is there's a difference between competence, being good at stuff, and confidence, how you feel about yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so maybe that's the next thing to unpack, Rich, is what's the gap between competence and confidence and how do those two things differ?
Yeah. So I think we can unpack a little bit. When we talk about competence in the context of confidence, actually, competence is just one facet. It's an important facet, mm-hmm. of developing confidence, but it works in tandem with the other facet of confidence that we call self-worth.
Yeah.
Okay. So across this series, we're going to be exploring how those two facets, competence and self-worth, work together. So, you know, what often happens is from a competence perspective, if a person is lacking confidence, they could be experiencing one of two extremes in terms of this area of competence. So, for example, somebody with a fragile sense of competence,
yeah,
they could come at this from a perspective where they have what we call underutilized competence. So these are the type of people that you know, because of their upbringing and maybe their wiring, all of that sort of stuff, they're people that tend to avoid challenging stretch opportunities. Maybe they fear failure and they're scared of taking too many risks. So as a result, in the context of leadership, they will be the sort of people that will second guess decisions. They might excessively depend on other people and, you know, not regard their capability as being up to the job. So that's one extreme of what we call the competence continuum.
Yeah.
The other extreme, you get the sort of person actually where almost like to plug this gap in self-worth that they have, is that they use competence as like an over-reliance, over-compensation type thing.
Yeah.
So they work really hard. They gain all the qualifications and all of the experiences. They work all the hours, and it becomes like an armor to them. You know, that shields them from their vulnerabilities internally. So, you know, from a leadership perspective, somebody who over relies on their competence, you know, they use their technical expertise as an armor to maintain control. They perhaps resort to micromanagement because they're frightened of empowering others, because they believe they should be in charge. And often because they believe unconsciously that they know best, they might dismiss input from their colleagues. So, you know, that's at the other extreme. So, you know, that can cause, you know, real problems in terms of a person's ability to operate effectively as a leader, I think, you know, both those two extremes.
I guess what you're saying here is that experience will build competence, but it won't necessarily build your confidence, because confidence is something a bit more internalized, isn't it? It's about how you show up under pressure. It's how you regulate your emotions.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think.
So, sorry to interrupt, but if you think about both those extremes, and you think of, say, somebody newly promoted to a role, or somebody being put into a stressful situation that's going to stretch their competence. Somebody who underutilizes their competence, you know, they're naturally going to be fearful of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's going to be a real trigger for them. And often in those sorts of people who have those sorts of traits, you know, that can look really obvious.
Yeah.
With the person who's built this over-reliance on competence, you know, the people that work all the hours, have got all the badges, got all the stripes, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this can be subtly undermining because, you know, they've got this competence, this experience, which they're using as a shield. And then suddenly they're being put into a situation actually where they're being stretched, but they want to maintain the shield. They want to maintain the veneer. And actually, that's really challenging for those sorts of people. So, we will all have both aspects of this underutilization and over-reliance on competence, you know, where we sit on that continuum. We have a tendency to sit one end or the other. But actually, depending on the situation and the trigger point, you know, you could be both ends of those of that continuum.
So there's a couple of things that come out of what you said there. One is, you know, you talked about as you become more senior, and I guess as you become more senior, the pressure ramps up usually. It certainly doesn't reduce as you get into more senior roles. So that can put real pressure on people. And I guess the other thing you said, you know, if you get promoted into a higher role, let's call it that, it's not just about turning up and doing the job. You have to own the role. And that requires a different mindset, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's move on to the internal game of confidence versus the external game. Now, what shows up externally to what's going on inside somebody? So looking confident is not the same as being confident.
Absolutely.
I think what you said is many leaders manage their image rather than their inner stability.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my first question to you is, what's the difference between looking confident and being confident?
This is a really important distinction. People that have listened to this podcast in the past will know actually that, you know, confidence is one of my specialist areas.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of research in this area, and I'm in the process of creating an online confidence pathway that, you know, perhaps people will hear about at some point. But the research I've done around the area of confidence, actually, this idea of us creating this veneer, that's a bit like our armour, that protects our fragile ego, is extremely common.
Yeah.
So when I coach people, and I coach a lot of people in the area of confidence, I'll sometimes ask them, so you feel, you know, perhaps lacking confidence in the role that you're in. So mm-hmm. describe for me what you think real confidence is. And usually when I ask that question and they articulate back to me mm-hmm. what they perceive to be like, you know, healthy confidence, that they usually describe a person with bravado, you know, somebody who will walk confidently into the room and have this veneer of confidence around them. And actually, they think that's confidence. But actually, confidence is this deep inner stability, actually, where you have a healthy sense of ego. You're not using competence to compensate for that internal fragility. And you have a healthy sense of self-worth. And you're not trying to plug that in an unhealthy way. So actually, true confidence is internal, not external.
So if confidence is calm and grounded and it's not loud and performative, which is what we're saying here, mm-hmm. yeah?
Yes.
How does somebody, you know, get the balance right between managing their image and basically regulating their emotions, which is the stuff that's coming from within? How do we get that balance right?
Yeah, well, I might challenge that assertion in some ways and say, actually, a person with a healthy sense of confidence is less concerned about their image
yeah.
and has this deep, grounded sense of self, and their sense of self-worth is not challenged when they're challenged, when people challenge them or they walk into a challenging situation. Those situations might be challenging, to be sure, but fundamentally, their sense of self-worth is not undermined because they've been challenged by somebody in their team, or because, you know, maybe they failed. And then, you know, somebody with a fragile ego, if they've failed in inverted commas, you know, they will see that as psychologically a catastrophe. So their sense of self-worth will take a real dive when they're challenged or pushed beyond their limits. And actually, what we're saying is, you know, we make mistakes.
Of course we do.
People will think what they think of you, and you can't control that. You know, so you can't control your image. You know, if your ego is so dependent on what you perceive other people think of you, actually, deep down, you're going to have an unhealthy confidence.
You mentioned something just now about how we tend to, in society and certainly inside businesses for many years, confuse confidence with dominance and bluff and charisma.
Yes.
Yeah. Why do you think that happens? Because I think that's a really important point you made, and I think it does muddy the waters in terms of what we're talking about here. So why do you think mm-hmm. we confuse confidence with that dominance and that charisma?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure I fully know the answer to that, if I'm being perfectly honest. But, you know, I think it is true that, you know, if I think when I started work back in 1983, whatever year it was, it's a very male-dominated environment. A lot of the people that were promoted up through the ranks had this external bravado, and arrogance about it. So in a sense, confident leadership, in inverted commas, was modelled by that particular style of leadership, which has come from a very sort of patriarchal, sort of male-dominated perspective.
Mm.
So I'm not saying all of that was necessarily bad, but actually, you know, what we need is more of a balance around. I mean, there's a sense in which how people perceive you can be important in the context of leadership and management, but it's important that your ego is not connected to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, maybe maybe the answer is we need to reframe for people what actually confident leadership looks like.
Because
if society has, for whatever reason, and maybe there's probably quite complex reasons why this happens.
Yes, I think it's
sort of championed dominance and it's championed charisma, which is, I agree with you, isn't always the right way to look at it. Because I'm sure you've known some very humble leaders who don't dominate the room just because they can, who are excellent leaders. You know, they're quiet and they're assured and they're calm, but they're excellent leaders. So you don't have to dominate the room.
Yeah, you don't have to dominate the room. But, you know, sometimes somebody with confidence, it might be that they do step forward and influence and shape like a meeting or something. But they're doing that from a place of secure self-confidence, where their self-worth is not being unhealthily compared to others around them. And, you know, they're not creating this shield around them where actually, you know, if I make a wrong decision here, it's disastrous because people will think I'm terrible. You know, actually, they're coming from a place where they feel secure internally. So how they show up, whether that's with being calm and, you know, being quiet, or whether they show up as somebody who is maybe a little louder and more expressive in terms of their natural personality. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about that, I think. It's more about actually where they're coming from internally, that deep, what we call the connected center in Zentano.
Yeah.
You know, if they're coming from a healthy place, their natural personality, you know, whether that's, you know, natural introversion, extroversion, dominance, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That will come across in an authentic way as opposed to a performative way.
And ultimately, you know, real confidence, you know, is about creating trust, isn't it? Is it trust with other people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point, actually, because if people think that you're pretending, or there's a pretense to the way you're behaving, you know, you're frightened of failure, you're worried about what other people are going to think, you know, you're second guessing all your decisions, actually, they're not going to trust you.
And do you know what? Some of those leaders who do sort of pretend around their confidence, people can see through that stuff. They really can.
And I mean, you know, let's be clear, nobody in the world is perfect when it comes to this stuff, you know.
No.
So we're all flawed, you know, including myself. You know, I've been on my own journey around confidence, but actually confidence ebbs and it flows. You know, different situations will challenge us, but actually, if we continually work on ourselves, that deep inner connected center, and we operate from a more healthy place, actually we can develop a confidence that would be perceived by others as being healthy, not performative, and real, I think, authentic. I know it's a bit of a buzzword out there, but, you know, actually operating with authenticity and not pretense, I think, is a really important way for leaders to operate from.
So my next note I've got in preparing for this conversation is talking about something you mentioned earlier on, the promotion shock. You know, confidence will often dip at senior levels because the rules change. So why does confidence drop when we reach more senior roles, when we get promoted into, you know, a more senior role? Why does that happen, Rich?
Yeah, well, if I talk about, you know, from my own experience, from an IT perspective. So I was in a very technical field.
Yeah.
And if you think about the knowledge and skills that that I build up, you know, when I'm coming through the ranks, you know, the ability to program, the ability to sort of problem solve problems with PCs and servers and networks and that sort of stuff. There's a sense in which, you know, that sort of knowledge is quite transactional. It can be very complicated, I'm not denigrating that competence and experience at all. But when we get into leadership positions where we're responsible for teams, maybe you're responsible, you know, listeners, for an organization or a large department or for a strategy or for a project or whatever, what that brings with it is ambiguity and complexity, you know, coupled with those difficult things that we have to manage around politics and interpersonal relationships. And actually, if you think about me, so all of that training I had about how to program a PC, and then I'm put into a room full of people, senior people, where there's complex interplay of political dynamics and sort of personal relationships going on. All of that stuff about how to program a PC doesn't help me in that situation. You know,
no.
The rules have changed. The ground is shifted completely from under me. So there's a sense in which, you know, I'm deeply challenged because these are difficult things to manage as leaders and managers. So that's why we often experience imposter syndrome. Every leader usually has some form of imposter syndrome. I challenge any leader out there to come back to me and say, I've never experienced imposter syndrome. You know, perhaps you've suppressed it and don't want to admit to it. But, you know, we all walk into challenging situations and think, you know, why have I been paid such a lot of money to do this? Have they missed something, you know? we all feel that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think my imposter syndrome, when I, you know, one of the occasions when I remember feeling it was not so much why am I being paid this much money, but it was almost like I'm in this room of people and I was telling myself this story. They're all so much more experienced than me. They've all done these things I haven't. Yeah. And it's more like comparing myself with others unhealthily. You know, we've all done this stuff. I'm sure we've all done this stuff. I guess...
Sorry to interrupt, Dave, because I want to pick up on something you said there.
Okay, go on.
That's really important. Yeah, because your trigger points are different than my trigger points.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't, you know, so your imposter syndrome will show it differently than my imposter syndrome. And all that's to do with our upbringing, the way we're wired, you know, our risk appetite, all of that sort of stuff plays into this. You know, and this is why actually confidence goes really deep.
Yes.
And it's changeable. It's something we can develop and it's not performative. You know, that's the whole point of this podcast, is to position this stuff around confidence very clearly. You know, because when we talk about developing confidence in Zentano, we're not talking about bluff and bluster and arrogance and bravado and pretense.
Well, I think another really important point here about, you know, why does it become more difficult the more senior you get, is the phrase, you're there to be shot at. As you become more senior, you become more visible, don't you? And when you're more visible, if you don't have that sort of healthy, grounded form of confidence, that can majorly impact you because there's nowhere to hide. There's often nowhere to hide in more senior roles.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, actually. Because often, if I think back to my experience, you know, chairing important meetings or, you know, whatever. And actually, you're on the receiving end of that stuff. You know, you're quite vulnerable to, you know, what people think about you. You're feeling vulnerable because you have to make a decision in this context. And some people are going to be happy with the decision. Some people are not. All of those factors play in to undermining our confidence if it's not in a healthy, grounded place.
Well, it's interesting. I've experienced that in the last 12 months where I've acquired, I won't bore you for the reasons why, but I've acquired the chairman's role, or the chairperson's role, should I say, at my tennis club. And there's good reasons why I've been asked to do that. But of course, you suddenly realise that everyone then sees you, well, you're top of the food chain, mate, so the buck stops with you. My way of dealing with that is not to be that kind of, well, I've got all the answers, you know, I know what to do. I'm very collaborative, as you know, and getting a great team of people around me where we do it together is my way of dealing with that. And as you said, I will not have all the answers. Some of the issues we're tackling are not things where I maybe have massive experience in doing, but I've got people around me who do. So I think that's my way of dealing with that. So yes, you are visible, but you don't have to hide. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. If I can just pick up on something that you said there, which I think is really important. Actually, having the confidence to realise you don't have all the answers and necessarily all the competencies, and that then, if you have this deep grounded confidence, and you know you're okay with the fact that I don't have all the answers, what you'll then do is you'll look to the other people around the table, you'll be open to their input. You empower them to have a voice, and actually you will want to use their knowledge and experience to work alongside yours, and you see it as you see leadership as a truly collaborative thing. And you know that's why a deep-rooted, healthy confidence can be so powerful in the context of leadership, and that's why performative confidence can be so undermining to psychological safety inside teams, inside organisations. And I think often when leaders and managers either underutilise or over-rely on their competence, particularly over-relying on competence, actually, sometimes it's difficult to spot those traits inside yourself, because the defensive shield that you've built around you, that armour that you've built around you, will, if you like, inure you from the feedback, you know. So when you receive negative feedback from your colleagues, you'll not want to hear it because it exposes that vulnerability deep down, you know. So this is really difficult stuff to work on, actually, I think.
It is difficult stuff to work on, but I think you picked up on the collaborative thing, because that is naturally who I am. But I think, you know, as in general terms, as people go up and they get promoted or they go into more senior roles, they will have old measures of success for their previous role, but those old measures don't necessarily apply to the new role. You have to decide on new measures. So, you know, taking this step up to the chairperson's role and dealing with some of the issues I'm now dealing with where I don't have the experience, if I clung to my old measures, that could sap into my confidence. I need to reframe it. It goes to where I want to take the conversation next. If confidence is a practice, it's not an inherent trait, and it's built on habits and it's built on the work you do on your inner self, you know, how do we reframe confidence? What are maybe some of those measures of success that we should be looking to?
I like to use an analogy of a bucket filled with water. So imagine a bucket filled with water. That's a metaphor for your confidence.
Yep.
Yeah. So the more water that you have in the bucket, the more you have healthy confidence. I'm not talking about performative confidence.
Yeah.
So when we walk into challenging situations, we make mistakes. Maybe we make a poor decision. Often, the bucket can get kicked. We kick the bucket. I don't mean kick the bucket in that sense, but
not literally. <no.
laughs> Not literally kick the bucket, you know. But our bucket is kicked, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you know, our confidence gets dented. But you know what I try to instill in people that I coach is actually so confidence is not fixed. So that's okay if our bucket gets kicked a little bit and some of the water, or even all of the water, gets sloshed out, because actually you can fill the bucket up again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So if you operate from this place where actually it's not the end of the world that you make a mistake, yeah, you made a mistake, you recognise that, you learn from it, and then what you start to do is you start to do things differently, and as you experiment and try things differently and you have little measures of success, you use those measures of success to fill back up your confidence bucket. So there's lots of little habits and micro habits, and we talk about this on the online course that we're developing. You know, you can use those to fill the bucket back up. So the important thing I want to really stress here is often when I ask people that question, go back to that question I ask people in coaching, what is true confidence? They often see it as a fixed trait.
So
they see it as something they're born with, or at the very least, well, you know, that's okay for, you know, for people who've been to public school or whatever, and you know, they've had that sort of education. That's not me, you know. That's,
yeah,
you know, so they regard their own set point of confidence is like a fixed thing, but it's not a fixed thing. And often I will say to them that those people, maybe that have had that like fantastic education perhaps, it doesn't necessarily mean actually that they have healthy confidence. It could be performative. I'm not making any judgment on that, but you know, actually it's really unhealthy to compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I often say the death of self-worth is when we compare ourselves unfavorably with other people. You know, we are who we are, warts and all, and actually, you know, deeply accepting that fact, you know, and valuing ourselves as a human being is one of the foundational points of healthy confidence. I mean, in our confidence pathway that we're developing, you know, we've developed this idea in Zen Sangha called the confidence compass. Mm. I've talked about those two facets of competence and self-worth.
Mm.
And the confidence compass pulls those two things together in a very powerful way, which gives people, if you like, an analogy and a metaphor, a powerful metaphor for understanding their confidence and moving forward in terms of developing healthy confidence to fill that bucket up, so to speak.
A bit like you, Rich, I've definitely developed confidence over the years. You know, would I have been as naturally confident, as calm and grounded when I was a younger man as I am now? No, definitely not. It's definitely something I've got better at by working hard at it. I think what I've learned is, particularly when you're feeling unconfident, it's because the emotional temperature is going up inside you, isn't it? The thing I've learned, I think, is you've got to that point, find a time to pause, because you need to seek clarity. You need to sometimes look at multiple perspectives, not just the one that you're focusing on at that time. So I think in terms of practical anchors, and we've talked about this before in previous podcasts, finding some reflection time, finding some kind of pause time. I know you use breathing when it's in the moment. You know, there's various ways of doing this, but I think finding that pause time, seeking some clarity, looking at the perspective, not just from the one you want to look at, maybe some other perspectives, is a really healthy way, I think, of practically helping when your confidence is wobbling. Would you not agree?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about this in subsequent episodes, you know, the little micro habits that you can develop to keep your confidence bucket topped up, or to fill it up when the confidence bucket gets kicked over. But, you know, taking time out, reflecting, you know, creating the ability in the moment to ground yourself when, you know, all hell is breaking loose inside that, you know, inside the meeting that you're in. You know, we've all been in those meetings where, you know, people are losing their cool, or it's getting highly challenging, and staying grounded in those situations, you know, that's teachable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
and that's learnable stuff.
So before I wrap this podcast up, Rich, any sort of top tips from anyone listening to this? Because obviously I frame this as why experience alone doesn't create leadership confidence. That's kind of the topic for today. Any sort of couple of quick top tips around that before we wrap up?
So one of the things I would say, and we talked about this quite a lot in previous podcasts, is putting a gap between what I call stimulus and response, you know, which is one of the core things in the context of developing emotional intelligence. So the ability to ground yourself when everything is going to pot around you is the ability to put the gap between stimulus and response. Okay. So the best way to do this is to practice putting a gap between stimulus and response when the pressure is not on. Okay.
Okay.
So
yeah.
one of the things I would recommend people do is, in a Teams meeting that you're in next week, while it's still really friendly and chatty and people are all getting on, just take a moment, just to, if you like, take an emotional temperature check. Just take a moment to think, you know, what am I thinking right now cognitively at the moment? You know, what are the thoughts and the feelings that are going through my head? What are the behaviours that I'm expressing to those around me? So what we're trying to do is practice bringing self-awareness in those moments where you're not under pressure. What that then does, that builds the wiring inside the brain to help you to insert the gap between stimulus and response when it really is going to pot in the meeting, you know, when the temperature starts to rise. You can use that practiced method of putting the gap between stimulus and response to ground you when the temperature starts to rise. So that's what I'd say. It's a bit like practicing penalties.
Mm.
You know, football players, they practice taking penalties a lot before they need to take penalties in those key moments in high impact games. You know, so put a gap between stimulus and response and practice doing that. And we'll unpack that more in future episodes.
And I think if you find that difficult to do to begin with, that's absolutely fine. You can, of course, reflect after the meeting and answer
Yeah.
So, Rich, that's it for today. My sort of closing point on this is if you're listening to this podcast today and thinking, oh, I should feel more competent than I do, well, there's nothing wrong with you. It just means that you're growing as a human being. Mm-hmm. And senior leadership definitely demands a new type of confidence. You know, you can build it. So in the next episode, Rich and I will explore the silence confidence killers that even the strongest leaders rarely talk about. So that's where we're going next time. But for today, Rich,
that'll be interesting.
It will be interesting. But for today, Rich, thanks for your time. And
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Bye.